From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. It's the second hour of the show. That means we get to talk about news roundup. I got Matt Butler with me here. Matt, welcome.
Good to be here.
All right, so we're going to get into the news roundup really fast, but first I'm going to play the trivia clip. We had a bunch of people guess on the text line. Most of them got it. It's a pretty obvious one. Although it is a lot older, so this skews to our older audience. They're going to get this one. I don't know if you're going to get this, Matt. This is kind of a deep cut.
Let's give it a go.
I also feel weird. I want to preface this clip by saying I did feel, and I talked about this earlier, I feel weird playing this clip because it's somebody who I no longer admire in personal life. But I still think that the stuff that they create, I still enjoy. So it's a strange thing. We can talk more about that in just a second. But here's the clip. Take a guess. Good luck.
I thought of that old joke, you know, this guy goes to a psychiatrist and says, Doc, my brother's crazy. He thinks he's a chicken. And the doctor says, well, why don't you turn him in? And the guy says, I would, but I need the eggs. Well, I guess that's pretty much now how I feel about relationships. You know, they're totally irrational and crazy and absurd. I guess we keep going through it because most of us need the eggs.
That's a funny joke. Well, yeah. All right, so do you know what that's from?
Woody Allen. Is it Annie Hall?
It's Annie Hall. Okay. Yeah, you got it. Great movie, a classic, really. Here's the thing about Woody Allen. My wife, for a long time, did I love Woody Allen. Yeah. When I was younger, I thought he was just the funniest guy.
Yeah.
Super brilliant, really, really funny guy. I think everybody kind of acknowledges that he had a real special ability to make people laugh.
Yeah.
And then there started coming out like all this kind of weird stuff, maybe some stuff that people got kind of uncomfortable even talking about.
Definitely.
And, you know, at that point, my wife, very early on, she's like, nah, I'm not comfortable watching this guy. I can't watch his movies, because I was trying to show her like, oh, you got to watch this movie. It's really funny. Small Time Crooks, all these different movies are hilarious. You got to watch these. She's like, no, I can't watch Woody Allen. And I'm like, no. You got to separate what you hear about him from his art. And she goes, I just can't do that. Like, she also will not listen to Michael Jackson.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people have that. Like, a lot of people go, I know that Thriller's good, but I can't listen to it in the same way because all this stuff came out about him, all these allegations against him, and it just makes him uncomfortable. How do you feel about that? Like, how do you feel about the art versus the artist?
It's so difficult because, okay, I'll give you an example. Like, growing up, I was a huge fan of a band called The Smiths, Morrissey, Johnny Marr, Andy Rourke.
Yeah.
Later in his life, that band stood for certain things and reached me emotionally at a certain point as a teenager. It spoke to me. Later in his life, lead singer Morrissey went in a direction that was pretty uncomfortable in some of the things he espoused and had to say in the press. Now, in a band situation, I think it's a little easier because you can say, well, that was the band then. That was their combined effort. Johnny Marr's guitar work, for example. With somebody like Michael Jackson, though, it's really difficult because what people associate with that music a lot of times was so good. You're growing up. This is music you play at parties. This is fun, upbeat, good stuff. You know, young Michael Jackson, the Jackson 5.
Yes.
And then you, years later, you realize, oh, that's who he was.
Yeah.
It's difficult. I think it's a little easier for some people when the artist is no longer alive, because then they personally are not profiting off of the music anymore.
Well, like somebody like Michael Jackson's estate.
Right.
Still is massively valuable.
So Paris is benefiting from his music, but Michael is no longer living that life.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, people can root for her, obviously, and his other kids. I know he's got like Blanket, and I think there's another one as well. But it's just one of those weird things. But man, was Woody Allen funny.
Yeah.
Like, so funny. I thought he was just hilarious.
These are all such gifted people. It's very hard to set aside these legendary artists and the things you hear and experience about their art and then realize they're completely different people.
Yeah, like Picasso. He's another character who, obviously, he created some amazing art. Oh, yeah. People were, you know, still to this day, they're like, oh, he was one of the best artists of all time. But he had some personality traits that people look back on now. They go, like, should we really be celebrating this guy? Yeah. And I think somebody at some point, I don't remember who it was, but like a high-level person said, hey, we need to work really hard to try to separate. Because there was a moment where people were going to cancel Picasso. Mm. And like all of Picasso's art then, it's celebrated all around the world. It's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. could you still celebrate it based on, you know, because of the artist?
And, or do you take it all out of the museums?
You know, or do you take it out and you try to like suddenly say that it's not valuable because you don't like a personality trait about a person?
Yeah.
I honestly don't know where I come down on it.
Is there anybody that you can't listen to or watch anymore?
I have a tough time. I do have a tough time like celebrating Michael Jackson's music.
Yeah.
I just heard too many weird stories about the guy, the allegations. I know that there's been court cases and I don't know if any of it has been cemented to be proven true. But I've heard a lot of like very, very compelling things said about him. Yeah, seemingly very credible things. I've seen documentaries about him where I just go, ugh, this makes me uncomfortable. And I think probably what's happening is now I now no longer associate that music with like the fun times of youth and parties and all these things. Now I associate it with like these things that I've read
and
heard.
That's what comes to mind the minute you hear that
music. Yeah, and as soon as that happens, you're just kind of done.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but Midnight in Paris, Woody Allen, Midnight in Paris.
He definitely had a gift.
He has a gift.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. Here's the other like small way that I can justify it with movies. Not as much with like music and art, because music is like, it's very much central on Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Or art is very much about like, well, this is like nobody else contributed to this but except Picasso. Mm-hmm. A movie is a small city's combined efforts.
Yes.
Right? So it's like, you need the director, writer, Woody Allen in this case, with Midnight in Paris. He then has also a DP. He's got an assistant director. He's got 5,000 assistants. He's got all the people who work on all
other
the set
cast
dressings.
Members that turn in great performances.
The cast member. Yeah. You're exactly right. So like, to totally take that movie away as being something that you can enjoy also discredits 10,000 other
and
people's hard work.
Yeah.
Which is done at an expert level.
Yeah.
So. I don't know. So the whole thing
similar
is
similar to how I feel about it in a band situation where there's other band members that contributed to art.
Yeah. No, I think we're on the same page. All right. Let's get in the news roundup. We're talking about some clips here from all the other shows. We look back on what they were talking about, and then we can chat about it. On Seattle's Morning News, Angela Poe Russell, she had some thoughts on Florida's youth social media law. I'm very interested in this. Let's see what she had to say about it.
Look, I get it. Social media is not all bad. People feel less alone and can make meaningful connections. But any good tool needs guardrails. We need boundaries, like yesterday. I am not so naive, though, to think that a law is going to prevent all kids from being on social media. But does that mean we do nothing? Does that mean we keep marching deeper into this crisis, talk about the problem, but do nothing about it? The reality is technology is moving faster than lawmakers and regulators can act. Now, AI is on the scene. And if the experts can't keep up, how do you think parents are faring? Some think the government should just throw up its hands and leave it to parents. How's that going? Everybody doesn't have great parents. And even parents with the bandwidth struggle to rein it in as the tech companies, the kids, and the scammers always seem a step ahead. We need an assist, desperately, and this is a step in the right direction. Now, I don't know if it's going to stick. Federal judges have struck down similar laws due to privacy and free speech concerns. Government intervention isn't always a bad thing. It facilitates education, healthcare, and is a safety net. It takes a village to raise a child. And in this case, if the village is the government in the form of Ron DeSantis, then so be it.
What do you think about this one? Do you think this is a good thing?
I think the principle is good, but I have some difficulty wrapping my head around actually how it's going to work because of the principle. We've heard for years, you know, we don't like the nanny state. Government can't play the role of parents, especially with things they do in schools. Mm-hmm. But now we're saying, okay, step in and do this, which I think is good. It's great to think that, hey, don't have young kids on social media. But I also know as a pretty tech-savvy teenager, I know that there's going to be a lot of kids who are going to figure out the way to get around it very easily.
You think you could have
I already know how to circumvent this. I'm not going to broadcast it, but it's pretty easy to do.
Yeah, please don't. Yeah, like this will be interesting because basically what the Florida law says is for 14-year-olds, they need their parents to get online with them and provide a physical document. I guess, I don't know if this would be like a PDF scan or something like that.
Like a birth certificate or some sort of ID.
Something that the parent gets access to that they give the website access to.
Okay.
To prove that this kid doesn't, that it is the parent giving permission, not just the kid clicking the button that says your parent gives you permission to be on the site. But I do, I agree. I think this is great in that it is trying to stop something that's getting kind of out of hand.
Yeah, and it is a real problem.
It's a real problem. We've seen all these studies recently about how it's affecting kids' emotional state, mental state. And Instagram just made this announcement. We talked a little bit about this on the show yesterday, but I thought this was really a step in the right direction. Instagram is saying that they will blur nude images sent to users that are under 18.
Oh, good.
Which is great.
Yeah.
And they're trying to curb what they call sextortion. So here was some of Instagram's announcement. They said, while people overwhelmingly use direct messaging to share what they love with their friends, family, or favorite creators, sextortion scammers may also use private messages to share or ask for intimate images. To help address this, we'll soon start testing our new nudity protection feature in Instagram DMs, which blurs images detected as containing nudity and encourages people to think twice before sending nude images. This feature is designed not only to protect people from seeing unwanted nudity in their DMs, that's a good idea, but also to protect them from scammers who may send nude images to trick people into sending their own nude images in return. So then they kind of walk through how this will work. And basically, because algorithms know everything and AI knows everything now, they can tell when something is a nude image. Like, I don't know how they do that, technology.
Yeah.
And they will actually put a warning on the screen before somebody sends something. And it will say, hey, are you sure you want to be sending this? Mm-hmm. Are you above a certain age? So I think protections like that feel like the step in the right direction.
Definitely. And, I mean, I hope it works. I'm just not sure if it sticks from a legal standpoint.
Yeah,
but I hope
sure.
it does work.
I hope it works too. All right, let's move on real fast. G and Ursula are talking about Generation Alpha.
I know for a fact that Generation Alpha is going to be a lot smarter than we are. And here's one of the reasons. When I was growing up, when I would ask my parents about something, hey, so why is it that I have to do this? And my parent would say, because I said so, right? I don't know if you guys have all ever heard that as kids growing up, where your parent says, because I said so. But why is it? Because I said so. Oh, okay. So Christopher Columbus discovered America, but no, because I said so. We're a generation of just doing what our parents said. Now we have a generation of young kids that are able to go and look and see the information for themselves. We were so used to the media, telling stories, setting and establishing narratives about about people in this country. So we look to the news and we said, oh, well, that must be true. The welfare queen, that must be true. All of the different myths that have had to be debunked because technology has done that. So y'all can keep all the reading scores. You can say all you want to about Generation Alpha. I'll rock with Generation Alpha because this next generation coming, you can't just tell them because I said so.
So Generation Alpha is like really young kids, right?
Yeah.
They're like
so the next ones that are going to be adults, I guess.
So they're like under 12 or 10 years old. Like
okay.
That's the Generation Alpha.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly.
We did a story there. I don't know if you remember this one, but I think you were might remember it. But do you remember we played that audio from the Generation Alpha kids, like kid influencers?
Yeah.
That's so creepy to me.
Yeah.
It's like 8-, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds who are monetizing their influence online with the help of their parents, because again, they're not supposed to be able to use this technology.
Right.
So they're broadcasting it on their parents' accounts with their parents' permission, supposedly.
Yeah.
And they're influencing things. Like, you know, it's them talking about makeup and all these different things. Like 7-year-olds. We played this horrible audio of this 7-year-old girl giving a makeup tutorial. And she's excited to go out to dinner. I don't know if she's going to Chuck E. Cheese or something, but she's excited to be going out for the night.
Yeah.
And so she's putting on a certain type of blush that she really likes. And you're just going like, oh, my gosh. Like, as much as G is talking about how these kids have access to information, I understand how that's beneficial. I also understand from the previous clip that we played from Angela Poe Russell how that can be detrimental to these kids as well. And, like, there is some amount of because I told you so, that I think is actually really good for kids.
Yeah.
Because what I think it does is it shows them, like, listen, number one, you need to be able to listen to authority.
Yeah.
You need to not always be questioning everything all the time. Like with my kids at home,
mm-hmm.
there are some times where I am telling them things that, and I'm just telling them because, listen, I can't sit here and explain it to you. It's because I said so.
Right.
Like, you just don't have time to explain things to kids. Because all the time, like, why?
Or you
why?
Can't
why?
Make it make sense at that stage of life.
I can't make things make sense to a 4-year-old. Like, I can't explain to him why he can't have cupcakes in the morning.
Yeah.
Or why he can't eat pizza for breakfast.
Or why you can't defeat gravity.
Why you can't defeat gravity. Why can't I fly? Why? These are just things that they need to get comfortable going, like, you know what? Sometimes you just have to learn how to listen to authority. Right. So I do think there is some sense there.
Yeah.
But, you know, every generation is, you know, very, very smart. They all have access to better information than we had.
I think that's part of what we see, too. Like, we see these people with extreme reactions on TikTok sometimes. We talked about different people like that.
Yeah.
And I think as kids get older, that inquisitive spirit, they're like, well, okay, it's that way, but why? They do start to question a lot of the established things. Hopefully it leads them somewhere good. But
hopefully.
I think, you know, as you get older, there is some of that, and that can be a good thing.
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes. We hope. All right, we got time for one more. Jack and Spike or John Sherry, your
Let's
choice.
Let's do Jack and Spike.
Jack and Spike. All right, talking about my favorite burger place.
In-N-Out Burger is a mid-hamburger. I have been eating In-N-Out Burger almost the entirety of my life. It is not as good as everybody says that it is. And when everybody freaks out about it, it's because they have Thousand Island dressing on the hamburger. Big whoop.
Is that what it is?
Big whoop.
It's the freshness factor, too, right?
It's the freshness factor, Spike.
I'm just asking.
I can make a smash burger at my house. It's super fresh, right? That's what I'm saying, is that basically what In-N-Out Burger has done is they've convinced everybody because they've got the freshness factor and they use peanut oil as opposed to canola oil.
And they have those cool potato machines. We can't forget about those. They go chunk and then the whole potato turns into fries right in front of your eyes.
Which is a travesty because I want them shipped frozen from China.
They're crispier that way,
right? Well,
it's the razor cuts that make them crispy.
I understand that people are super excited about it, but if you want an In-N-Out Burger, you can find the recipe list for an In-N-Out Burger on the internet, and you can go make your own In-N-Out Burgers, and you don't have to wait until 2025.
Yeah, but you don't get the sparkly white porcelain walls. You don't get the red and white uniforms, the paper hats that they sell as a take-home version of your experience.
Yeah.
It's the experience more than the burger, I think, for a lot of people.
It's also the price.
I love In-N-Out Burger. It's very near and dear to my heart and my family. Yeah. I've told the story already, but my dad worked at like the third or fourth In-N-Out Burger ever back in the late 60s.
Okay.
And, you know, he knew the In-N-Out family.
Yeah.
They're just nice people.
Yeah.
And they ran a great business, and people are diehard fanatics of In-N-Out.
And like Spike said, too, I mean, until I came out this way, I had never been to an In-N-Out Burger. And I went with my girlfriend in Oregon for the first time. And part of it was the experience. Am I going to say it was the best burger I've ever... Well, I don't really know, but what I do remember is that experience. The whole going there for the first time, getting food for the kids, you know, all that stuff. And that was what made it a good experience for me.
Did you enjoy the taste?
I did. I did like it. It was a good burger.
It's a good burger. Yeah. It's a tasty burger.
It's a tasty burger.
Yeah, it's good. I also like that they sell t-shirts. It is a vibe. Everybody likes it.
Yeah,
so.
And I like their commitment to quality. They're committed to not being too big and losing what makes them special.
They
like
are
that.
All owned. There's no franchises. Yep. It's all owned by the same family who still owns it. In fact, the girl inherited it. There was a tragedy in the family. Like the main family died in a plane crash.
Yeah.
And she inherited everything.
Lindsay, I think her name is,
and
right?
she's now run it for many, many years now. They own every single location, which I think is really cool.
I think that's great.
Kept it in the family. Yeah. And they've, you know, they could have expanded big time a long time ago, but then they would have lost control and quality.
What made it special.
And so they wanted to, you know, keep it special.
Gotta love that.
All right. That's it for the news roundup. Thank you so much. All right. We got a lot more coming up on the show. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I have a very special guest on with me right now. I'm excited about this conversation because, as you guys all know, I am a parent, I'm a father, I have three sons, and I'm about to have a fourth son. So we are doing a lot to entertain those guys. They are exhausting. It's very chaotic. If we stay in the house too long, everybody loses their mind. So we like to get out. We like to have fun where we can. But we don't want to spend as much as we have to. Every time we go out, it just costs a ton of money. So we're always looking for deals. We're always looking for a recreation that doesn't cost much. Unfortunately, it sounds like it is going up, even in recreation. Fun recreation or something, it's just getting expensive. Heather Bosch from Cairo News Radio joins me now. Heather, tell me about this.
Yeah, we're calling it funflation. We know that overall prices are about 20% higher than they were before the pandemic, but you are likely paying even more for discretionary funds.
Things like airline tickets, hotel rooms, concert tickets, dining out. I mean, these are all things that have grown more rapidly than the overall price growth we've seen.
That's Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst for Bankrate, who insists he's not trying to be a killjoy.
I always try to be careful when I talk about this because I don't want to tell people, oh, you can't have any fun. But I do want to warn about the dangers of credit card debt.
The average credit card interest rate is a record high, 20.75%. Nationally, Americans owe $1.13 trillion on our credit cards.
To put it in a little bit of context, that figure is up 47% from the beginning of 2021.
Yeah, there's still some post-pandemic pent-up demand. So he suggests doing a couple of things here. First, set up an entertainment fund, money you just set aside on a regular basis, because
things are going to come up, and it's good things, right? You get invited to a wedding or a concert or a sports event or something. We want to be able to do these things, but we don't want to put it on a credit card and finance that forever and ever.
Next, he says tap into unused gift cards, airline miles, or credit card reward points. But here's a big but. If you have a cashback or rewards credit card, remember, pay it off every month.
It doesn't make sense to pay 20% in interest just to get 1 or 2 or even 5% in cashback or airline miles.
He says the perks just don't make up for what you're paying in that high interest, Jake.
You know what? I'm like, everything this guy's saying makes total sense to me. I like what that is one of the secrets that my wife and I kind of felt like we stumbled upon. If you do use credit cards, not everybody does, but if you do use credit cards, do your best to try to not carry a balance on those.
Yes.
Obviously, everyone knows that. The other thing, though, is that rewards points. Like, we specifically selected a credit card that had rewards points that we could, like, you know, every couple of months, we're like, all right, what do we want to get this month? You know, like, what do we want Starbucks cards? Do we want to get something to some fun shop at the mall or whatever it is? Because it's crazy expensive out there. I mean, like, everything is so much money these days. And I don't know how people do it. It's really pricey.
You know, every little bit helps. And it's funny you should mention that, because Rossman tells me that 38% of Americans they surveyed say they are willing to go into debt to pay for something fun. 38% of us.
Yeah.
Would you?
I mean, it would depend on how long you're going to hold on to that debt, how long you're going to carry it. Like, if it's something that you like, if I'm going to finance a trip to, or I'm going to take debt out to go to Disneyland or something, I don't think I could do that just because it takes so long. Like he was talking about there with credit cards.
With 20%,
it would take so long to pay that down. And, you know, it's just, I think his idea too about trying to set a little bit of money aside every paycheck or whatever it is.
I love that.
And then at the end of the year, whether it's for Christmas or if it's for, you know, just whatever pops up, it's just such a smart idea.
Then you've got something. Even if it's like $5 here or there, maybe
totally.
Put it in a jar and see how much you can collect it a month. And then you can look at that and say, okay, maybe we can go to Disneyland at some point.
Yeah. Or
maybe not for what you collect in a jar, but you get the idea.
Have you ever used, there's an app that we use that I like a lot, but it's called Mint. Do you ever use Mint?
No. What is that?
Okay. So Mint is really great. And you can basically, you can go online. I think it categorizes everything that you're spending. So it hooks up to your bank account and it will show you like this great chart, this, you know, graph of here's how much you're spending on food. Here's how much you're spending on recreation. And it does it without even you needing to do anything.
Nice.
Like it just says, all right, well, this is a payment that was from a gas station. So we can identify this as gas. So if I want to find out how much I'm spending on gas every month, I just open up the app and I go like, oh, okay, look at that. I spent $700 on gas last month or whatever crazy number it is. And that is a really helpful reminder on like, all right, where is my spending going? Like, am I just like trickling money out that's I'm wasting?
Where can I cut back?
Yes.
Although I did have a little bit of a shock because I get my bank statement. I'm rather simple. It's just one of me. So I get out the bank statement. I went, what am I spending money on? Oh, food.
It's always food.
On food.
It's always food.
Yeah. Inflation is no joke.
It's not just inflation either. There's just the ease of, it's so easy just to eat out and buy food. for convenience. I mean, the convenience is just...
Especially with your little kids, end of the day, you're all tired.
Totally.
Let's just do the Red Robin.
Throw some cheeseburgers at them or there something.
Yeah.
When my wife and I were first, when we were first married and we were just trying to learn how to budget together because we'd never had like a shared budget.
That's new experience, yeah.
It's a totally new experience. And what we found that we were doing, we both had money coming in. We only had one place that we were renting instead of the two. So theoretically, we should have been saving a lot more money. But what was happening was we were like convenience eating all of the time. We were just like, oh, let's not make dinner tonight. Let's just go out to eat, all these different things. So at the end of the month, we looked at it. We're like, wow, we spent like a lot of money. I don't even want to say how much. It's embarrassing.
And you don't even realize, right?
The frustrating part about it was I was looking at this number and I was saying to myself, all right, if I at the beginning of the month set this aside as a budget and said, all right, you have this X amount of dollars to go and spend on restaurants, I would have chosen much nicer restaurants. And I would have maybe eaten out half the time, but I would have eaten at like nice places.
And fewer times.
Fewer
right?
times, yeah. But like if I said, all right, you're going to spend like the 1 month that we did it, we were like, wow, we're really like hemorrhaging money here. We were spending $1,500 on food, just like eating out. Ridiculous.
But not the nice restaurants, more fasty food.
No, like Taco Del Mar. And just like, I would get lunch at work, I would eat dinner out, and as would my wife. And that adds up really, really fast. And I would have been like, oh man, I could have eaten at like five really great restaurants in Seattle. But instead I just ate at like Taco Bell.
But smart of you to do that on the front end of the relationship. So now when you've got the kiddos, you have a better idea of how much it does cost to go out all the time versus maybe throwing that money in a jar or like you do looking at the app to see how much do I want to spend this week on eating out.
And for anybody who's listening right now who is thinking about having kids, get your money house in order before you have kids because you remember this when your kids were young.
Oh, yeah.
Because you had boys too, right?
I had boys. Mm-hmm.
They're just
everything, by the way.
They do. I was just going to say, like, I'm sure it's true for girls as well. I don't know if it's as true for girls. I have three boys. They are just disposal holes, like garbage feeds, whatever the phrase is. They are eating all of the time, round the clock, nonstop. Yeah. We just can't keep food in the house.
It gets more alarming as they get larger. I swear my oldest had a hollow leg. We called him Kirk Snack Trick because he ate so much at one point.
They just don't stop.
Yeah, they're just sort of engineered that way. Some girls absolutely do too. But yeah, those little guys, when then they become big guys and they eat a lot, you really have to. Costco is honest to Pete. I know it gets a lot of publicity anyway, but yeah.
You're talking to a true believer. I love Costco.
Buy in bulk. No lie, it works.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, crazy. All right, well, Heather Bosch, thank you so much for coming in.
Anytime.
All right, guys, we're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. All right, I want to play you guys some audio. I found this really, really interesting. There has been a lot of talk lately about the presidential election. Obviously, it's coming up this year. Everybody's very excited about it, or maybe just nervous about it, or maybe apprehensive about it. I don't know what your feelings are about it, but I know there's a lot of feelings out there. So, there was a discussion the other day, actually, this big story that was released. All the major news networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, all these different places, together, they put their names on this letter and they sent it, or at least it was leaked. I don't know why they didn't send it. I guess leaking it to the press is just as good as sending it. They leaked it to the world that they are asking both candidates in this letter, leaked but not sent, but now everybody has it, all these major news networks, for the Biden administration and for Donald Trump to both commit to a debate, two debates. American people, they want to see these two guys debate. The last presidential debate, which was in 2020, the last series of debates, the first one between Trump and Biden was watched by 73 million people. It's big business. And also, we need to see these guys in action. We need to see if they can talk extemporaneously. We need to see if they can talk without a teleprompter. That would be great to know that the president of the United States is quick on his feet and has an understanding of what he's talking about. They need to be able to make their arguments and give their vision of America to the American people. That's what we want to see. All right, so that's what all these different news organizations asked. And then MSNBC put together this panel, which I thought was really interesting. It's a bunch of undecided voters. Most of these people were from the back east. And they asked them, they said, hey, who do you think's better for the economy, Biden or Trump?
Just raise your hand if you think President Trump's policies on the economy would be better for your family personally. Raise your hand. All right, so that is everybody. President Biden argues that his economic record has been very good. He said President Trump's was not as good. What are you keying off of? Sean, since you had the best smile, and Virginia, the second best smile, what are you keying off of to say President Trump's economic policies would be better for you?
I mean, my past performance of my 401k, I know it was post 2020 and everything kind of flipped around, but You can't blame everything on 2020 for forever.
We have areas here in Pennsylvania where it's just at a standstill right now. Like, things are supposed to be being built and the interest rates are just way too high for people to you know, invest and start moving around.
And Virginia, just staying with you because Pennsylvania is near and dear to Joe Biden's heart. Are there Biden policies that you would blame for the problem? And if so, what are they?
The interest rate is so high right now, and I know they're trying to cut the inflation down, but like, if nobody is building, no businesses are really coming to Pennsylvania right now to keep us moving forward.
Even if you're trying to buy a house, because I'm trying to become a first-time home buyer, the prices are so high right now, it's just hard.
Is there anything Joe Biden could do or say between now and the time you vote that would make you feel differently about feeling that his policies would not be as good for your family on the economy? Or are you pretty much decided that Trump's policies would be better for the economy?
I mean, I feel like he doesn't even take accountability for what's going on in the economy. Not even accountability, like, he's in denial that it's happening.
The point is, Biden needs to hear the people, because when he's talking about the economy doing stellar, he's talking about the stock market. He's not looking at homelessness or joblessness. He's not, at Adrian's point, thinking about how much it costs to go to the grocery store. And he's gaslighting literally everyone in the process.
And Omar, you voted for Joe Biden last time, right?
Yeah.
So you can clearly hear there, and I don't think MSNBC would like purposefully put a bunch of people on camera that would be so critical of, you know, President Biden's policies, but this is what they ended up with. There was eight people on that screen. At one point you hear him there, he's like, it says, all right, show of hands, who thinks that Donald Trump would have better economic results for you in your life if he were president? Every single person raised their hand. They thought he was better than Biden. People vote with their wallets. So I think this is a really interesting thing that MSNBC put together. But also, they said, all right, well, if you guys all love Trump on the economy so much, are you going to vote for him for president? Well, not so fast, because they all also agree that they don't like Donald Trump. They think he's mean.
I just think Donald Trump is mean. He's a bully. And I think his policies are solid. I pretty much agree with most of them. I just don't like him as a leader.
I don't think he does a lot to try to bring groups together. And you know, from when he ran the last time, our country became so divided. And I don't know if it's anything particular about what he said or did, but our country really we really picked sides on this, and it just got out.
I feel like people forget about that, Sean. That's such a good point. It's like Trump is so volatile, and not only internal strife and conflict, but, you know, like, I don't feel comfortable with him calling someone with nukes Rocket Man.
Yeah, and I think
so much behind social media. It's like, yeah, just get your fingers off the phone.
Yeah, he's definitely
exactly. It's a situation that went on at the Capitol for me that got really out of control. It makes you wonder, well, if he's back in there, what? Anything could happen now.
I feel like if Trump just shut his mouth, like, and just did his policy and his work, I would say, yes, please come back. But if he just learns to keep his mouth closed, don't make comments about people that he might not necessarily like that much, and just be a strong leader and do his job.
It's going to be an interesting election. I don't know how that's going to pan out. I think people would love, I mean, wouldn't it be novel? What a novel idea to have somebody that you actually want to vote for. I just don't think there's a lot of folks out there who are just loving either candidate. There might be. I mean, I know there's a lot of folks out there on the right and on the left who just think that their guy is the best. But, you know, for the rest of us who might be a little closer to the middle and just go, yeah, I don't know about these guys. They're both kind of, they both have their, but that's, I guess that's just human nature. Everybody has a downside and nobody's going to be perfect. All right. We got a lot more coming up on the show. Stick around. We're going to be back here on Cairo Nights.